Today, we talk about tampering. What's so bad about tampering? Also, employment of athletes, the future of college sports. We get into a lot of stuff here. And exactly what would you trade for some BW3's fried pickles? You're going to find out.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Rule 13.1.1.3 is coaches up in their feelings rule. That's what the bylaw is.
Russ Dellinger.
You know, I think we're looking at an offseason here where you're going to see a lot more cases pop of tampering.
And SI's Pat Forty.
It's going to be hard to restrain that. And if maybe this is, again, the original tension of higher education versus money-making athletics.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And I want to get into some issues today. Issues, gentlemen. A lot of issues in college sports.
We have issues. They have issues.
Yeah, we have issues.
A lot of issues.
People have been worried about my Johnny. I confess to a Johnny Walker bent there, and people are getting a little concerned.
Between that and your pronunciation, Stan, there's people out there worried about you.
They are worried about me. It's okay. It's okay. I'm doing all right. I'm settling in. All right, I want to talk about tampering, and I want to talk about Caden Proctor, the excellent offensive lineman and former five-star recruit from Des Moines area, who was originally committed to Iowa. Was a huge, important recruit for the Iowa Hawkeyes, and then flipped during his senior year and decided to sign with Alabama. And he went to Alabama, and he started as a freshman. And there were some struggles early in the season, but then he got it together, became a good player, and he had every bit of a look of Alabama's next great offensive lineman, which was... I think if you followed his recruitment as I did, and I don't had any insight, but you could kind of tell he didn't want to go anywhere but Iowa. It's just the opportunity to play for Nick Saban and get in that system was like too much. And so he went to Alabama, which makes sense. A lot of people go to Alabama because of Nick Saban and his track record of getting guys into the NFL. So season ends, Nick Saban retires, Caden Proctor enters the transfer portal, and almost immediately commits back to Iowa and is enrolled now at the University of Iowa. He did a interview at a basketball game. He was at one of the Iowa basketball games, and he did an interview with the local media or a few media members. And he said this, which got people kind of fired up, particularly down in Alabama, about returning to Iowa. No bridges were burned at Iowa. That's why it was so easy for me to pick them when I did enter the transfer portal, because we still have those relationships. As an aside, this is why coaches no longer get angry when recruits, or shouldn't, they get stiffed by a recruit.
Right.
It's a boomerang. They'll be getting mad at him. They used to get mad at him. Even, this is back to Proctor, even after I was doing bad in the SEC and struggling, they hit me up and said, "We're proud of you. You're going to get through this." And that's what ultimately helped me with my decision. Now, this caught the attention of the Alabama fans who are dealing with the departure of all sorts of really talented players after Nick Saban. They're understandably a little scared here, or a little shook. NCAA bylaw 13.1.1.3. No, you guys all know that one.
Wow, look at you.
13.1.1.3. Kind of says it all.
It does, actually.
An athletic staff member or other representative of the institution's athletic interest shall not make contact with the student athlete of another NCAA or NAIA four-year collegiate institution, directly or indirectly, without first obtaining the written permission of the first institution's athletic director or an athletics administrator designed by the athletics department to do so. So they hit me up, suggests probably a thing. Now, here's the question. This would be what people call tampering. Is it, Pat, and is it a... And what's your thought on it? I guess I'll start with that. I won't ask leading questions.
Yeah, it's tampering according to the rules, but is it, should it be considered a violation? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the intent was not just, hey, hang in there, buddy. It was, hey, we're Iowa over here and we still got our eyes on you. So yeah, it's tampering, but these, you know, that's a rule I think we've said all along on the podcast, it's going to be virtually impossible to enforce unless you've got it in writing of i.e. text messages, emails, that sort of thing. But if it's just a phone call to say, hey, Caden, keep your chin up, man. And then, you know, the NCAA is going to come in and say, is that really what happened? He goes, well, you know, actually, I might have called them. I don't remember, you know, blah, 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 you know, whatever the case may be. I'm sure you could probably defuse it. But this, it's an impossible rule to enforce. And this is yet again a situation where the NCAA is trying to fit a rule book into a reality that it doesn't work in.
So tampering in... came up a lot at the NCAA convention in Phoenix. I popped into one of the enforcement seminars with basically the three heads of the NCAA enforcement division. John Duncan was there, and Mark Hicks was there. And Mark Hicks from the NCAA talked at length about tampering, said the NCAA is focused on tampering and inducements, especially related to NIL and portal players. He said that the NCAA has a lot of evidence, including screenshots of text messages, even from head coaches directly reaching out to a player of another team, or a collective CEO reaching out directly to a player of another team. They have these screen grabs, and he said it's not always that direction either. Right. He said they also have screen grabs of players texting coaches, basically saying, if I get in the portal, would you be interested? Or agents of players doing the same thing. So I thought it was interesting during that seminar about how much time they did spend, Mark Hicks and John Duncan, on discussing tampering and how focused they are on it. And we saw the Florida State case that just got completed. And we know that they're at Florida is under investigation. And we know that probably dozens of other schools got NCAA inquiries. You know, I think we're looking at an off season here where you're going to see a lot more cases pop of tampering. You know, the Florida State case was a transfer, you know, from, well, he was at Georgia at the time, didn't end up transferring. So we're going to see, we should see, if they have this evidence that they claim to have, we should see more things come unearthed and penalties handed down. Now, I will say one thing John Duncan said at the seminar was, we don't have enough, right? A lot of times we don't have enough proof to levy penalties, to give a notice of allegations and make those allegations. But they certainly have some screenshots. And so it'll be interesting to follow over the coming months, especially again this offseason, if we'll have more of the Florida State type cases come to fruition.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is I think there's going to be you will have more of this offseason. That would be my prediction. And tampering will be one of them. Look, if I don't know what happened here, and as you will see, I really don't care. But if Caden Proctor's comments are correct, and now he's talking to the media, his what actually happened may not be what he said. they hit me up and said, we're proud of you. That would be, that suggests to me a text message from somebody at Iowa saying, we're proud of you. You're going to get through this. Now, that's a nice sentiment, and we'll pretend that it's not an Iowa, you know, it could be just a guy doing a nice thing. Hey, you know, I always liked you. Hope you do well. Keep going. Or it could be someone going, interesting. Things aren't going quite as planned down there in the Shangri-La of Tuscaloosa. Maybe, just maybe, he'll come back. Now, I actually don't think Caden Proctor would have transferred if Nick Saban hadn't left. But the rule as written says you shall not make contact with the student athlete. It doesn't say you can't make contact unless you say some encouraging stuff. It says you can't make contact. Now, they really write poorly. It's funny. They have 13.1.1.3. I'm not even a lawyer, and I'm saying, well, what if he contacts me first?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So already this rule as written, what shall not make, I didn't make contact with him. He made contact with me. What I can tell you is Iowa is one of 133 schools in FBS, and they are one of 133 schools in FBS that are guilty of tampering, would be my prediction. So this is about Iowa and Alabama. It could be about everything. It would seem if we're going to have a, this is like, you got to go to the Supreme Court, strict constitution and, originalists and stuff. What did they mean by shall not make contact? Is returning a text contact or not? What is that? They never define these things. That's sort of their problem. But it shouldn't be hard.
Do you want a bigger rule book? Wait a minute.
I know.
You don't want a bigger rule
book,
do you?
If you've got 13.1.1.3, you'd think of answering this question. Now we need 13.1.1.3.1.
Yeah.
To determine what shall not make contact. He texted me, you can't be guilty. If you return said text, you're guilty. Now, most of the tampering is happening because the players have agents. They have high school coaches. They have workout guys. They have 7-on-7 coaches. So if you regularly recruit, say, the elite, I don't know where he went. I think is he from West Des Moines? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
That's where Caitlin Clark's from. All the great athletes. I don't know where he's from. He's from whatever. Iowa's recruiting that high school, okay? So they call the high school coach, hey, how's Caden doing? Man, would have loved to have gotten him. You know, anything ever happens, let him know he's got a spot up here, right? You're never policing that. You can call his trainer. He undoubtedly works out with a trainer that all the best athletes in that area, everyone's got these training gyms, 7-on-7, all that. Very easy to tamper that route. Plus, he's probably got an NIL agent or some kind of agent or something. Not hard to do it that way. This is the direct way. But if they want to, they have the right to seize everyone's cell phone and look. And they should be able to nail Iowa on this. If they texted first. And I don't know that they did or didn't, but that's the situation. My issue, so we agree, this could be just, if they actually went after the tampering, and college coaches are up in arms about tampering. Like, they're crying about tampering nonstop, right? This is the number one, maybe the number one thing they hate is tampering.
Every
day. Want it. Oh my, tampering. I will disagree with them in a minute, but agree, this is everywhere. Pat?
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, it is universal, but it is the thing that coaches complain about, I would say, the most at this point, because, they hate losing players, and they figure that to lose them, somebody's got to be tampering with them, even though, to your point, they're doing it too. So, again, policing that is going to be just really difficult when it's going to be hard to get schools to come forward with stuff, because once they do, you're going to invite them into your own backyard to look at what you're doing too. I just think that this is they may be able to Ross's point, you know, get more of these cases. Are they going to get enough so that everybody stops complaining? No, no, that's going to always be the case. And yeah, the NCAA took a ton of heat for like a year. Like, you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything. And now they're going to start doing stuff, and we'll see if they're going to take a bunch of heat for doing too much.
Yeah, I you know, what happens a lot, they said this in the seminar at the convention, was high school coaches. That seems to be the avenue. That if the coach at the college isn't reaching out directly to the player or the player to the coach, it's the intermediaries, the high school coach, you know, reaching out to the college coach and making a match there. It's so hard to enforce this. And while they do have, you know, some screenshots and texts and stuff, right, and some evidence, it's hard to get a lot of it. It's happening everywhere. And I don't know, unless you close back the portal, right, and make it where a player can only transfer, you know, one time and no waivers, nothing else. I don't know how you stop this, right? It's the movement that is that issue here and that causes all this. And look, we can talk about this for a while, but the case against from the attorney generals against the transfer policy is going to potentially open up the transfer market unlimited right now. And one thing Charlie Baker said at the convention in Phoenix was that he said something like, we're here for a little while, you know, like we're here in this unlimited world of transfers for a little while until that case gets rectified, completed, or settled in some way. So buckle up, because the tampering is just going to go up.
Yeah. And so there is a lawsuit with 11 attorney generals, 10 states and Washington, D.C., and the U.S. Justice Department just joined in as well, that essentially says any prohibition on transfers should be deemed illegal, whether it's restraint of trade, restraint of opportunity, whatever. These 10 states, I looked, the 11 states, like, this is a bipartisan situation. Like, Washington, D.C.'s AG and Ohio's AG are involved. Like, probably not agreeing on a whole lot, but they agree on this. And so anytime you get both sides going at it, states and feds, all that, it's a hard fight for the NCAA. Their argument, of course, is we want to control it. I don't know how they win. I think they're going to lose. We've said for a while, it'll probably be unlimited transfers. I still think they're eventually going to have to come up with something to stop unlimited eligibility. So the tampering issue is a big thing. And just to stay on this, also, Caden Proctor from Southeast Polk High School, which is in the outskirts of Des Moines, Iowa. It's really, it's kind of this massive high school in the middle of literally nothing. Can't walk to the pizza shop from there, but it's Iowa.
There's a fair amount of nothing in Iowa.
Yeah. It's like the outskirts of a suburb. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, Zach of a player. Here's my thing, and this is why I know I'm arguing what nobody wants to argue, because the coach is just, oh my God, the tampering, and the NCAA is doing what everyone's following the coach's lead in this tampering thing. Why is this wrong? Why this is unenforceable virtually? It's going to be a massive effort on something, but why is this wrong? Why shouldn't in any other element of life, you're allowed to tamper unless you have a specific written contract that says you can't talk to a competitor? And that would be a very draconian business non-compete. There are non-competes. You can't get all our secrets and then go to the to our arch competitor or these five companies, you know, without 2 years or 18 months. Those are common, but those are contracts. They don't have contracts with these players. But wherever you work, if you're doing a good job, if you have a perceived value, if you have a perceived talent, the competition is looking to say, hey, you ever think of coming working over here? Maybe we can offer you a better situation. I don't care if you're in high school and the girl you like in class got another boyfriend. Go, hey, man, if that doesn't work out, let me know. Okay? Tampering is how this whole thing works. Everything is a tamper. It is the freedom that you get in life is to look for better opportunities. And your whoever, whatever deal you have going doesn't get to prohibit, so you never hear about that interest. In any other walk of life that I know of, unless you literally sign something like that, and I even then, I find those to be unbelievably, I imagine them very, very rare. Like, you know, some kind of, I don't know, cutting edge science, and you're like, if a guy approaches you from the other place, you got to run away. Tampering is how the world works. It provides information to the players. Hey, we're interested in you. And so I understand the coaches, and they want control. Coaches just want control. This guy's stealing my player by saying we're interested. Tough break. That's how it works. Some guy's telling your girlfriend that he got a better car than you. He could treat you better. That's just how you got to fend that off, man. So why is this wrong?
Well, and it's been it's not like it's anything new, right? It probably has increased because of the freedom to transfer more, right? With the one-time transfer exception, obviously it's increased, but it's always been there, I think, and especially when you had like grad transfers and things like that, you had the waiver process and kids left, like they're making up excuses to leave. I mean, most of those kids were probably tampered with. The vast majority of players who enter the portal, I would say it's certainly 50% or more, enter the portal knowing where they're going, right? Now, how is that the case? Even some of them, I think there's a label when they enter the portal, right, called do not contact label, which means, hello, I know where I'm going, leave me alone. Well, I mean, how do they know where they're going, right? It's because that they communicated with that school staff.
Sure. And, you know, frankly, back when basketball players, well, they still can go, you know, pro early, and most of them have agents or agent connections before they get to college, and the agents are to the ones telling them, yeah, you can go, you're going to get drafted here, there, wherever, you should go. So, Dan, your point is hard to argue. It is that this is kind of how things get done in American society and American business. The problem is, obviously, I mean, the root cause, as Ross said, is the transfer exceptions and the constant churn of players in and out and in and out. And that's what drives everybody crazy. And I do think that the NCAA fatally screwed that up when they allowed waivers. But if the attorneys general are going to say that you can't prohibit transferring anyway, then you just got to, if it comes to a point where you just got to let them go and we have unlimited free transfers, it's going to be the quote unquote Wild West in perpetuity. That's just going to happen. And I mean, we could wring our hands about graduation rates because those will absolutely suffer. And whether it's really a good thing for players to go to four schools in 4 years or 5 and 5 or 6 and 6 or whatever, but it's going to be hard to restrain that. And it may be, this is, again, the original tension of higher education versus money-making athletics. And if the point all along was to play athletics while you're getting this degree, which was this great thing, and is still a great thing that you can get an education paid for and get a degree that's going to help you for 50 years. But if that no longer is the driving force here and it's just, hey, how much money can you make while you're in college, then that goes out the window.
Yeah, it's the tether between higher education and an academic model in major high revenue producing professionalized in a lot of ways athletics, and it continues to stretch and it just no longer really makes sense. But everybody wants to try to keep it together, including honestly, like, you know, probably a lot of the media, like me, like I don't want to see necessarily a minor league separated from these universities. Like, I don't want to necessarily see that, but there's so much money involved right now. It's going to be hard not to see that. I'll say, when I go back to the court case with the attorney generals that are suing the NCAA over the transfer policy, and I'll say that there were two, I think, courses of action for college leaders, and they may still be the case. They were discussed at the convention a couple of weeks ago. One avenue was to discuss with the attorney generals a settlement, which they hoped would be elimination of the waiver process, which was at the center of the attorney general's lawsuit, and just have a one-time transfer. He can't transfer anymore. I can't imagine the attorneys general is agreeing to that. The other avenue is for the NCAA to take it upon themselves and create more restrictions around academics and increase the academic eligibility policy to transfer, which I think that is something discussed by the D1 board at the convention and something they're kind of pursuing. It's basically kind of a twofold here. One, penalize schools for taking transfers if those transfers don't meet certain requirements. And two, just not allowing athletes to transfer if they don't meet certain academic requirements in progress to degree.
Yeah, we discussed a long time and they never should have done the waiver. Like, we're like, that's a bad start. And it was. They were trying to, it had good intentions, but they don't think it through. They didn't think it through to where everything becomes Uncle Dialysis. Obviously, nobody wants guys playing at five schools in 5 years or four. Like, that's not the way you want to watch the sport. You want to get a guy and it builds up and he's coming back. Oh, that kid was, I see that freshman look pretty good. And then all of a sudden he's a starter as a sophomore. And then he's just, you know, that's what we all want. We all want that kind of stability. And I understand why coaches don't want to think someone's stealing their players. You know, the line is, I'm in the layup line or the congratulation line after the game. My guy at 27 and the other coach is going, hey, hit me up. Right. All of those things are we all want that. We all want that. We all want that stability. It ain't about what I want. It ain't about what the coach's little feelings are. It ain't about how hard it is to do the. I mean, what about the players? Rule 13.1.1.3 is coaches up in their feelings rule. That's what the bylaw is. I don't want you talking to my kids. They might want to leave me if they know they have a better option or a different option. Tough break, dude. Like, imagine working, especially at that age. You don't even have a job at this school. Now, this is where we're going to get to how you solve all these problems, but you're working at McDonald's and you're killing it. And the guy who happens to, own the Subway down the street stops in for a burger and he sees you, you're mopping the floors and you're making the fries and you're doing all this stuff. And he sees a good, hey man, I got a job. I got a Subway down the street. You want to come work for me? I'll give you a dollar more an hour. Right. That's the American way. Why should Caden Proctor not know that Iowa's interested in him? Hey, if anything happens, we're here for you, Caden. Well, guess what happened? Nick Saban retired. Like, they should. Every player, every person in this country should have as much information as possible to know their options. And letting corporations, big business, regulatory agencies, or the government in any factor limit your knowledge of what is possible for you, the individual, or any individual, should be un-American. And so this rule, and they've got the fans and they've got a lot of media. Believe me, we'd have higher ratings if I'd have sat here and ranted about how terrible the tampering is. Oh, my God. We got to do something.
If we were pro 13.1.1.3, we'd
have higher ratings. Yes. Easier to scare you about it. But what are we doing? Why shouldn't the kids get tampered with? It's a good thing. And it's your job to continually make it so that they don't want to leave. And I get that takes more work. You also have bigger staffs and more salary. So they are going to, as much as we said, whatever it was, how many years ago when they started those waivers, I get people want this, but it's a bad idea. This is going to be a colossal waste of time. And people are going to get impacted when they shouldn't. Go ahead, Pat. That's the end of
I'm with you. Maybe we go back and maybe we blame this all on Tom Mars. He got the Justin Fields waiver to go from Georgia to Ohio State. And I think kind of, I don't know that he pioneered it, but he was on the cutting edge of smart lawyers coming up with ways to get waivers. And I do distinctly remember asking someone at the NCAA, well, you're going to shut the waiver loophole, right? I'm like, no, we'll always have waivers. Like, yeah, there we go.
You're dead. You're dead.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Shouldn't have ever had it. And now I think there was some regret in having it. And you know what? If they didn't have it, though, let's just be honest. The transfer policy would be the target of a lawsuit because of how restrictive it would be. You know, so either way, we're bound for an unlimited situation of player movement, barring a new model.
Right.
Right. That includes contracts.
We will get to after the break. Let me just say this. It absolutely would get lawsuited that you can't transfer. But by allowing the transfers on the waiver, you set the precedent that you can't really say if we allow transfers without a waiver, without sitting out, it has detrimental effect on our sport because you are allowing them, right? The same way they're in trouble with this unlimited eligibility. It's going to come. Someone's going to say, why is it only 4 years? Because there's a kid at Miami who's going to play his ninth year of college football.
Yeah.
And the sport's going to go on fine. So now when somebody sues you and says, why is there only 4 years of eligibility? You gave this guy five, you gave six. There was a COVID year. You felt bad for the kids. There's this, there's that. This guy's playing nine. This guy was eight. This guy was 32 years old, the father of three, kicking field goals for Colorado. Like, how do you say? And say goes, well, it's not what we're supposed to be. It won't work if we do that. Well, you just did it. That's the precariousness. Once you open up that track record, it's hard for a court to be like, what? I get it. You guys get it. All of us get it. It would be a lot better if it was a 4-year deal and every kid went to a school and just kind of gutted it out and said, hey, this is my thing. For my purposes, that'd be fantastic. I think one of the reasons women's college basketball is increasing in popularity is because you can name the stars in their schools because they keep coming back to them. There's Caitlin Clark. There's Angel Reese. There's Paige Breckers. There's, you know, right? You see the players, and it helps. It's not as popular as football, but it helps a little bit. So, and why is men's college basketball? It's tough, man. You might get a guy for one season. All right, so the one way to set up restrictions is at least to have employment contracts, right? NBA, NFL players can't leave after 1 year every year because they sign a contract for 4 years. They have a collectively bargained situation with their union that says, oh, we can franchise tag them, or we can do this exemption, or we can do that. All of this stuff gets worked out when they are employees. And so I don't know how all these people screaming for these controls also want to sit there and say, yeah, these guys aren't employees. I don't know how that's going to work out. Ross has a terrific story going through in detail many, many of the issues that are at front. It's on Yahoo Sports right now. It's sort of the fallout from the Project D1 proposal that Charlie Baker put out there that wasn't really well received, but in fairness, I think he kind of put it out there to start the conversation. They need to be finishing the conversation really fast, but I don't think they're going to get to that. But Ross, how in this article, there's a lot in this article and we don't have a forever podcast, but how is employment contracts, do you think, going to be, do you believe it will be inevitable that that's where we end up?
Well, if it's not employment contracts, it will be some kind of collective bargaining, revenue sharing, right? That's what the bigger schools want to move to and believe they need to move to it. You know, the story really hit on 3 points, and they're all kind of intertangled. And really, there's a fourth point that I didn't even get into, which we just spent a half an hour on, which is the transfer policy. They're all these things are kind of intertangled. The one is the House antitrust lawsuit and settling it. Two is the probably inevitable split of the Power Five or Power Two from the NCAA. And three is, yeah, Charlie Baker's Project D1 in a future compensation model. And again, they're kind of all lumped together. So Baker proposed a model that I think was meant to be a talking point and get the conversation started. And I think the vast majority of the NCAA, Division III, Division II, many in Division I, support it, right? Want it to happen. The 95%, you know, they want it to happen. The 5% of which the model, the proposal really targets, right? The Power Five and the Power Two isn't as supportive of the proposal. And it's Charlie Baker's met with three of the five AD groups of the Power Five. Pac-12 ADs aren't meeting for very obvious reasons. And he has not met with the SEC ADs, but he met with Big 12, ACC, and Big 10. While Big 12 and ACC, I think, you know, kind of normal type of meeting, informative meeting, Big 10, I think, aired grievances pretty strongly about the proposal to him in an in-person meeting in Chicago a week ago. And SEC, if he did meet with them, would do the same, because many of their ADs have been public and certainly privately critical of the model. So if they don't want this model, right, what do they want? And it's becoming more and more clear that they believe at the highest level of the sport that they need to not just put a toe in the pool, which some believe this proposal does, but both feet, which is a revenue sharing type of collective bargaining situation. And you might ask, well, why? Why do they want to leap in like that? Well, the first reason is to settle the House case, the antitrust case against the NCAA that could cost it billions in retroactive NIL. So in order to settle the House case, you've got to have and Jeffrey Kessler, who's over the House case, who was over the Alston case that he won against the NCAA. He told me, look, there's two avenues here. The NCAA can lose in court and be forced to pay a lot of money and change its model, or it can decide to change its model itself, settle the case, and still pay a lot of money, but maybe not as much. So that's kind of what's happening right now. And those at the highest level don't believe Charlie Baker's proposal goes far enough to settle the court case and to be a long-term solution. And so Charlie Baker and the Power Five commissioners are meeting here in D.C. Thursday. And I think this will be a big discussion point. In the third part, right, of the story is the split. And when or if it happens in the House case is kind of a wedge. And we've talked about this on the pod. I know over the fall when I attended that night commission meeting and a lot of really interesting things came out of Damon Evans, the Maryland athletic director. But the House case is thought to be kind of the last straw probably to leading to the split of the Power Five or the Power Two. And you might ask, like, you know, why? Like, what does the House case have to do? Why would it split? Why would it lead to a split? And I think it's one, in order to settle, only the real high-end rich programs can afford to settle. I've heard numbers from 10 to 15 and maybe even $18 million per school chipping in to settle the case. So number one, only the high-end schools can afford that. And number two, only the high-end schools can afford a model to operate in a model that is fair enough, as Jeffrey Kessler put it, to settle the case. So that's kind of the crux in this meeting on Thursday. I don't know that it will produce any real big news, but it is news that the Power Five commissioners and Baker are meeting, and they're probably meeting, you know, about the future and about the future model. I'm sure there'll be airing of grievances in a discussion about their differences going forward. And will they go forward together or apart?
Yeah. I mean, just a fascinating pileup of issues. I thought you did a very nice job kind of bringing together the big picture tensions there. I'm glad we also have a name for this, Project D1. You know, I was like, it didn't really have a name. It was like Baker's idea, whatever, you know. That. So if we can call it Project D1, that's good. There was some real geographic irony at the NCAA convention. If geography can be ironic, I think it can. So all of the college leaders in America are there in Phoenix, downtown Phoenix, trying to figure out how they're going to keep this thing from going completely off the rails or going bankrupt or whatever. I think it's 7 miles away is the Arizona State campus and the Mona Plummer Aquatic Center, where Grant House trained as an Arizona State Sun Devil. He's the named party on the lawsuit there. I don't know whether anybody put those together, but you know, you can put anybody's name on the suit. It doesn't really matter. The fact is that suit is looming like an absolute anvil over everything. And to me, the biggest issue people are probably going to ultimately care about is, are we really just going to boil this down to the SEC and the Big Ten? What happens to everyone else? Do they all even compete for the same championships? Do we still have an NCAA basketball tournament that looks anything like what we're used to? Those sort of things. But there's so much else that there's so many things that have to get decided before we even get to that point, right? Of whether there's going to be a split and who's involved in this split. It is like if I were a college leader, I would probably literally be driven crazy trying to keep up with all of the issues and where things stand and which court cases are going on. There's an NLRB hearing right now, National Labor Relations Board in Southern California, and some of the lines of questioning out of that have been really interesting, bringing up some very good points of, well, are, you know, academic considerations made in terms of letting athletes into school? You know, no. Well, yes, they are. Yes, they actually are. How do athletes feel about voluntarily doing more than 20 hours of work with their sport per week? Well, it's voluntary. No, it's not. It's not voluntary. I mean, there's so many trappings around athletics that have long been kind of straying from the academic side of their job, their quote unquote college existence. And so you get these new parties involved that all of a sudden put a new lens on it. And it's pretty hard to argue that athletes haven't been employees for quite a while.
Yeah, It is, you get to court and it's the arguments are different than what the coach grandstanding can do or what fans can want or things like that. You start getting really uncomfortable conversations on how this model works. And I agree. I think the concern of, are we down going to be down to two football leagues? I don't think so. I think there's ways to preserve at least four. Are we going to ruin the NCAA basketball tournament? If there was one thing that I think is important here, I think you need to identify these guys as labor. When you can say they're employees, a lot of the things that people don't like, such as transferring all the time or things like that, can be solved. You can then actually apply controls, but you do need the government to help with a few things, probably a number of them, but they need to be very specific and small, because once you try to go large, it gets picked apart. Preserving the NCAA basketball tournament would be one of them. One of the issues is if you have a team of volunteers, like not every school is going to be able to afford to say they're employees, because every kid on every team is going to deserve at least minimum wage. So you don't want to lose St. Peter's. You don't want to lose Abilene Christian. That's this is a great event in this country. Cultural, it means a great deal to people everywhere. And we wouldn't want to lose it. But you can't have professionals playing amateurs if they're both competing in the exact same event. The amateurs can say, we have the right to be, we're professionals also. They have you're recognized. You can't call them volunteers anymore. And so they need to carve something like that out, like the NCAA basketball preservation, Division III and Division III sport preservation, something like that. We say, yes, the Alabama football team are employees. The West Al, I don't know what, a D3, Denison College track team is not. They need to get really small and specific. What do they call it? Skinny bills, I think they call them.
And they
need to admit some things that aren't going to happen, because what we do not want is 40 football teams and the NCAA basketball tournament is just gone. That'd be terrible. Nobody wants that, but I just feel like they have to get over a lot of the grandstanding arguments that work in the public square that don't stand a chance in court and really aren't, if anyone pushes back, really aren't good arguments. I said, we don't want the guys transferring all the time, but how the heck do you make that argument that they shouldn't be allowed to?
Yeah. You know, employment, labor, unions, all very scary words for, I think, many college athletics leaders. They're obviously trying, you know, Charlie Baker was at the witness in the hearing, congressional hearing last week, and very much trying to implore Congress to add to any NIL legislation an exemption for athletes, a special status, in order for his plan to work, right? This proposal, this Project D1, it needs to happen. You got to have help from Congress, and things are hope and optimism are waning a little bit in Congress. You'll be shocked to know. I'll say, and we've talked about it quite a bit, the Cruz-Booker talks in the Senate for a compromise for a bill. And there's a couple of paragraphs in my story about it, but the latest out of those talks, you know, would not exude optimism that they are going to agree on anything anytime soon. Because I was told that those discussions have kind of been pushed to the back burner a little bit because of three other issues that you might call more important than college athletics, which is immigration, the budget, in a war in Ukraine. So those things, yeah,
and the Middle East
more, a little yeah. more important, yeah. And so they've kind of been pushed to the back burner. So as the hope and doubt increases that Congress will do something or Congress won't do something, whatever, which would make Baker's proposal hard to adopt because it needs congressional help. You've got the Power Five, Power Two, whatever, kind of thinking about some other models, right? Which leads back to Pat's point of the split and in the separation. And even if they are split or separated, you know, shouldn't they be able to compete with everybody else, like in the NCAA basketball tournament? Well, maybe, but I think their point at the top level of the sport is, why should we, right? Why should we share this revenue? We can go to our own tournament for just as much money, keep the money, sort of thing. That's the kind of feeling, even though I think a lot of them would like to see it continue, because I think that's one of the things that I remember an AD survey that was conducted last year. I think 90% of ADs want to keep the NCAA tournament, basketball tournament, as is. But if you're having to pay athletes directly through employment or whatever way, you need all the money you can. And if that means keeping this money and splitting off and not doing the tournament with everybody anymore, you know, don't put it past them not to do. Right. I mean, I wouldn't put nothing past them ever. Right. Well, yes.
That's the thing. Everyone's out for their own bit.
Yeah.
And if there's ever a thing to protect, there are certain things that can be protected that are good for we don't need Division III sports to go away.
No.
It doesn't help anybody.
No.
So, like, there's certain things. The NCAA basketball tournament, yeah, okay, I get a little bit bigger of a cut and my 8 and 18 team gets in and gets to get destroyed. That's not doing, like, there's certain things that need to be protected here. But what too much of the focus on and too much of the arguing in front of Congress and too much of the arguing in general is on, I hear this line all, is this what we want college athletics to be? Well,
oh, the Nick Saban line.
It's not
yes.
what you want. Yeah, you wave a magic wand, but that isn't how it works. It's not what you want. And so the rules are written, everything's done, and it's just, it's so messed up right now and so contentious. And I think a grand reset of actual honest thinking. And I know the coaches are not deep thinkers. They don't have time to be deep thinkers. They just have time to be like, I just lost my starting left, you know, in middle linebacker. I just lost my point guard. They just lash out at that stuff. But these are the worst people to listen to. They're the last people to listen to. So we got a lot more to get to on the subject, but I don't want to go for hours. We also have,
but it's a good off-season subject, and we will continue to explore it as we go.
We will
along
try to do it intelligently, as if this was intelligent. But I've got people's courts.
Uh oh.
If we're going to do court, forget the house case. Late Sunday, Justin Carpenter pulled up to a Lawrenceville, Indiana BW3s, and it was closed. But he really wanted some fried pickles. Delectable. Mm-hmm. Understandable. Mm-hmm. So Carpenter proposed a barter exchange to some B-Dub employees who were cleaning up, two of whom were minors. The police said Carpenter offered drugs to the Buffalo Wild Wing workers in exchange for fried pickles.
That explains the pickle, fried pickle craving right there.
Well, yeah, it does.
I mean, does. You know, high as a kite, hungry, all that good stuff.
He offered, let's see. He offered, oh no, that's what they found in his car, but they did offer. Oh, he offered marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy, and vape cartridges containing THC.
Really, man, he wanted a lot of pickles.
Yeah.
I got to say, if you've already got marijuana, cocaine, and ecstasy, what do you do with the vape cartridges contain? Like, that seems like what he also had, like a Mountain Dew for the caffeine. Like, what? That doesn't seem necessary.
You need to hit for all cycles.
Anyway,
hit for the cycle.
The BW3 workers called the cops. They found the guy down the street. He had even more drugs. He also had Xanax and Oxy. So. Mm. So the question is, if you were working the BW3s, would you have made this deal? And if fried pickles aren't enough to get him to offer the Oxy and the Xanax, he was holding back on that. Apparently those were too valuable.
Yeah.
What could BW3s,
cocaine.
What would you get? Yeah. What did he think the Xanax was going to get him?
That should have at least gotten him a dozen wings. I mean, for the love of God.
Is Xanax and Oxy? Like, I mean, I want the fried pickles bad. I am going to commit a felony and try to barter with drugs to minors working, mopping up at the BW3s. But hey, now, not the Oxy. That's just too much. Yeah. I don't understand this world. Pat, you're into heavy drugs. What's going on?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
You're into late night fried pickle cravings. Tell me what's happening here. Make it make sense.
I didn't even know you could get fried pickles at BW3. So that's news to me. Where's what I would have done if I were the Buffalo Wild Wings people, though. Lawrenceville, Indiana, Southeast Indiana. You're not far from Milan. Miracle Milan, 1954 state champions, the most famous state champions in the history of Hoosier hysteria, the ones they did the movie Hoosiers about. Call Bobby Plump and tell him to get over there and kick this guy's ass. He'd do it. Bobby's, I don't know how old he is now. He's got to be seven, like, you know, 90 or so. That's okay. Bobby can take solution. This guy. Bobby Carpenter. And the whole starting five from Milan would get over there and whoop this dude. And he would be sent home hurting and with no pickles.
I'd take the drugs.
Then there's the ultimate.
I mean,
from Ross.
You know, if I'm working at BW3s, cleaning up, sweeping at the end of the night, long day, probably not making much money. And somebody approaches me with, hey, here's some marijuana. If you go fry me some pickles, I might be frying pickles pretty soon.
Kind of. I mean, it's definitely a, I mean, and how did this negotiation go? It's like, hey, man, I'll give you some pot. Nah, I can't do it. How about Coke? Ecstasy? Well, no, wait. How about a vape cartridge for your buddy? He doesn't look like, he says no to drugs, but vape, that ain't really. How about the Oxy? Nah, come on, bro. It's pickles. You'd be surprised to find out Carpenter had already had a ankle monitor. So he may have another one.
Yeah, our guy has the makings of a recidivist, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done. Probably back then. I'm not gonna say.
I mean, yeah. The juice has to be worth the squeeze in this situation. What happens? You have fried pickles for a little bit of marijuana.
Thank you, Sean.
You could go somewhere with that. You could just have it for entertaining if needed, if you don't even use it. Whatever it is. But
you just don't mention to your boss why you made the fried pickles late, right? Just helping a customer out.
Wouldn't he offer the Oxy, though? I'm not a huge drug right? guy, but I don't see that pairing well.
I thought the Coke was more valuable than the Oxy, but what do I know? I'm not a street narcotics operation, you know.
The title of this pod needs to be, quote, I'm not a huge drug guy, Sean said.
Yeah, I'm not a huge drug guy, but
maybe.
Yeah, but.
But for pickles. I mean, if all the price is I get some fried pickles, I steal some fried pickles from the count's off a little bit. Does the manager come in the next day and go, we're minus 10 fried pickles. What happened? Go ahead, Sean.
The vape carts are even stronger than regular weed. It's not just unless you just had regular nicotine carts. It's ultra processed marijuana. So if you are into it and you just didn't think the weed was worth it, if you like weed, then you want the carts. I don't know what these guys are doing.
You know how they do those Chick-fil-A commercials where like,
oh yeah,
know,
yeah.
My son was leaving for the military and he wanted a Chick-fil-A sandwich, but the line was too long. But Bobby, the manager, recognized us and ran out and got him one and thanked him for his service, right? This is basically the polar opposite of that.
Yes.
Or they should do this one, right? Our employees turned down a boatload of drugs to not serve.
That's right.
The Lawrenceville drug scene. I don't know. It's a tough.
By the way, Bobby Plump's only 87, increasing the chances he could kick this dude's ass.
Bobby Plump's like, why did I get dragged into this? All right, finally, a would you eat it? We'll end with a would you eat it. This is from foodandwine.com. Nacho cheese Doritos have been a staple of the snack food aisle for nearly half a century. Now they're headed to the liquor shelf. The tortilla brand has partnered with Empirical Spirits to release an 84-proof clear liquor that actually smells and tastes like the real thing, minus the crunch. So what we have here is Dorito-flavored booze. What is it? What kind of booze is it? Where's this thing?
Unlike any alcohol
you've ever smelled or tasted before.
Didn't we already do a bit on this? Or maybe I at least suggested it some time ago.
I thought that was something different. In Empirical's view, Empirical's very early days in Copenhagen, a team member returned from lunch with a sandwich and a bag of Doritos. Curiosity, this is according to the chef at this liquor company. Curiosity led me to turn this snack into a spirit. Upon tasting it, the result was amazing, and we burst into laughter. It's a spirit. Doesn't really say what kind of alcohol it is. Anyway, would you eat it or drink it? Do you want a Dorito liquor?
The description, it was amazing, we burst into laughter. At no point does anyone say it was good. They just say it was amazing and we burst into laughter because, my God, I can't believe how terrible this is, and we're going to sell this to dumb some suckers who want to buy it. That's my interpretation of that comment. No, 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 no. There is no such thing as a good Dorito-flavored liquor of any kind. Out.
I would tend to agree. But I was trying to, yeah, I was trying to see what kind of liquor it is. Either way, I would be down to like, you know, take a shot of it or take a taste. But
no.
What would you even mix it with? Doritos and
sadness.
I mean, I don't even. Yes, that's right. That's right.
To get there, he started with a base of distilled beer, Pilsner malt. The Doritos were then introduced and allowed to infuse in the liquid under exacting time and temperature, vacuum distillation, whatever, you know what I mean, which operates at lower temperatures than traditional distillation, was used to safeguard flavors collected during the maceration. Ultimately, you can think of the product as a nacho cheese flavored vodka.
God, disgusting.
I got to say, no. The Dorito people are usually on their game. But not, I don't even want to try it.
How about vodka flavored vodka?
I've never had a vodka. I never have a vodka and sat there and said, boy, I wish I had a Dorito.
Yeah. No.
I don't know. I'm a no. Sean?
Yeah. I've had plenty of Doritos after vodka. That's been a tried and true, well-working method. I don't see where I would be able to drink this. If you're going skiing and you want to drink while you're skiing, you have like a little fireball shooter or something that gets you a little warm.
Yeah.
There's golf. No season where I think I'm pulling out the Doritos vodka and shocking everybody because it's the perfect fit. Will not drink seems something that that Carpenter would drink before offering drugs to some Buffalo Wild.
Yeah, I'd rather do Oxy and fried pickles, man, than that. Yeah, I agree. I think we're in a rare agreement. Tough one. Sorry, Doritos. Done good service through the years, but not on this one. All right, that's our show. it's all over the place. We will be back next week. For more, continue to share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. Listen, subscribe, leave us a nice review, whatever. We really appreciate you. We will talk to you later.
13.1.1.3 forever.